Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Independent Film Festival Boston began this week and runs through April 30th. And one of the films featured in the festival, The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Swartz. Swartz is the late pioneering computer programmer and internet activist who was arrested and charged with 13 felony counts for illegally downloading data from JSTOR, a digital library of scholarly journals. Though both JSTOR and MIT, where he made the illegal downloads, later recused themselves from the case, the Justice Department pushed forward in 2011, threatening Swartz with up to 35 years in prison and up to a $1 million fine. Here's Swartz's former girlfriend, Taryn Steinbrückner Kaufman, who's featured in the documentary.
He had basically stopped working on anything else, and the case was, in fact, like taking over sort of his whole life. Many people go through life without ever having something like 2 years of total uncertainty about what your future is, like 100% drain on your financial resources, and especially somebody as sensitive as Aaron.
On January 11th, 2013, Swartz committed suicide. He left behind a legacy of groundbreaking programming, political activism, and questions surrounding the zeal with which government prosecutors choose to apply such laws as the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. Brian Knappenberger is the director of The Internet's Own Boy, which screens at the Somerville Theater on Monday. Brian, welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Great to have you. Well, first of all, I wonder if you might just tell us how you became involved with this film, with Aaron's story, and how you knew him.
Well, I made a film called We Are Legion, the Story of the Hacktivists, which followed the sort of hacktivist collective, non-group, Anonymous. And I was on a panel talking about hacktivist activity about a week after Aaron died. And on the panel with me was Quinn Norton, who's an ex-girlfriend of Aaron's. And pretty much everybody at this kind of symposium that we were at knew him. And it was a very, you know, understandably, it was a very somber affair. And so that's really when the film started. I wasn't sure I was making a full-length documentary film, actually, for a couple of months. And then a few months later, I had a long conversation with Aaron's father. And I had, by coincidence, had lost a friend to suicide about 4 months before that. And, you know, I'd also become a new father myself. So it was this very kind of moving conversation that I had with Aaron's father, you know, who'd just lost a son. I just lost a friend. I became a new father. And it was, so there's a kind of a moment where I decided, where it became obvious that I was going to make this film.
Well, that's interesting because it explains a lot about why, I think some of the most powerful points in the film actually explore Aaron Swartz's childhood, really, and
yeah,
sort of the remarkable person he was from a very young age.
It's true, yeah.
Because we have a clip here of his mother, Susan Swartz, talking about watching Aaron present at conferences when he was just
right,
in his... Yeah, it's amazing. So he was just in his early teens, and let's listen to what Susan Swartz says.
I was floored, just completely flabbergasted, that these adults regarded him as an adult. And Aaron stood up there in front of a whole audience full of people and just started talking about the platform that he'd created for Creative Commons. And they were all listening to him. Just, I was sitting at the back thinking, he's just a kid. Why are they listening to him? But they did.
You know, he was a software kind of programming prodigy, really, as a young kid. And he was well respected by some of the great internet dignitaries. But, you know, to his mom, he's just a kid getting up on stage talking about, you know, the platform that he created for Creative Commons. And it really makes you realize that this is a person.
You know, what's very interesting and I think not uncommon when it comes to young people who are clearly so very brilliant from a young age is that they're very capable, right? And they're naturally people who question, why can't I do something? And you actually explore this really powerful part of Aaron Swartz's personality, his tendency to question where everything came from.
Yeah, I think that drove him through his whole life. In fact, he wrote in one of his blogs that what he saw or what he thinks most people mean when they say intelligence is just really curiosity.
Well, we've got another clip here from the movie The Internet's Own Boy, and it's from a 2010 interview that you include in the movie with Aaron Swartz, where he sort of talks more about his approach to life, his approach to knowledge. So let's listen to that.
It's not enough to just live in the world as it is, to just kind of take what you're given and follow the things that adults told you to do and that, you know, your parents told you to do and that society tells you to do. I think you should always be questioning. You know, I take this very scientific attitude that everything you've learned is just provisional, that, you know, it's always open to recantation or refutation or questioning. And I think the same applies to society. Once I realized that there were real serious problems, fundamental problems that I could do something to address, I didn't see a way to forget that. I didn't see a way not to.
When I hear Aaron Swartz sort of describing that it's not just enough to live in the world, that you have to question why things aren't working and do everything that you can to improve what you see and experience around you. The sort of flip
side. It's a striking clip.
It really is. And the flip side to that, though, is I wonder, you know, speaking to the people who knew Aaron Swartz best, did you get a sense from them that he was ever aware that there are sometimes consequences to that sort of single-minded determination to change the world?
Yeah, I think he was aware of consequences. I mean, I think that he just saw, and I think that clip maybe speaks to this, is that he just saw that if you are in a position to make a change, if you have skills that can affect some sort of change, then there's no good reason not to do that. I mean, I've made two films now about hackers, and I've certainly met people who are done with the system and are ready to just burn it to the ground and start over. This isn't Aaron. Aaron, I think, wanted to work within the system, wanted to hack the system in the best possible sense, in the sense of making it better. Mm-hmm. But it kind of speaks to a kind of broader hacker ethos, that clip that you played. And I think it's one of the reasons why I'm drawn to hacker stories in general, or to the hacking community. They seem to be engaged in this relentless pursuit of the truth. You know, they seem to have an enormously low tolerance for nonsense and lies. They kind of route around these walls of deception.
And in the movie, you include voices that reflect that. For example, you talk to David Serrata, columnist for Salon, who basically says that, you know, he, amongst many, just felt that the government was trying to make an example out of Aaron Swartz, while instead turning a blind eye, more or less, to what many see as financial crimes that led to the recession of 2008. So let's listen to that.
When you start deploying the non-controversial idea of deterrence only selectively, you stop making a dispassionate analysis of lawbreaking, and you started deciding to deploy law enforcement resources specifically on the basis of political ideology. And that's not just undemocratic, it's supposed to be un-American.
You know, the prosecutors in this case told Aaron's dad that they needed a case for deterrence. They needed someone to make an example out of. And I think that automatically begs the question, you know, deterring what? What kind of example were they trying to make here? You know, yes, Aaron is a hacker in the kind of broad sense of the word, but the majority of his activity, to me, seemed to be political organizing. And it's being prosecuted in a time in which we were struggling to recover from this kind of financial meltdown. And none of the people involved in that have been prosecuted in any real or significant sense. So where do our priorities lie?
In the course of making the film, were you able to speak with anyone from MIT, for example, or JSTOR even, about their decisions to recuse themselves from this case?
I had lots of conversations with MIT and JSTOR. I worked very hard to get them both in the film. Also, I'd add to that the government. I wanted, you know, this case never went to trial. We don't know what the government's case would have been. I desperately wanted to know that. I want to understand it, still do. The government completely shut us down. That was probably the biggest source of frustration from the film. I mean, they, you know, government hasn't been forthcoming on this case at all.
But I just wanted to come back to the person at the heart of the story, of course. You know, Aaron Swartz himself. And to do so, I just want to play one clip here again from the film The Internet's Own Boy. And this is from Aaron Swartz's father, Bob.
If you look at Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak, they started by selling a blue box, which was a thing designed to defraud the phone company. If you look at Bill Gates and Paul Allen, they initially started their business by using computer time at Harvard, which was pretty clearly against the rules. The difference between Aaron and the people I just mentioned is that Aaron wanted to make the world a better place. He didn't just want to make money.
Most of our great sort of tech luminaries have transgressed the law in some way. Notably, another notable example is Mark Zuckerberg, who scraped the Harvard database for pictures of students for a kind of hot or not site called FaceMash. And the way he scraped it was in a very similar way to what the way that Aaron scraped the kind of JSTOR database. And Mark Zuckerberg got 6 months probation. And Aaron was facing, according to the press release, the government's press release, 35 years in prison and a $1 million fine. So there is a question here about what do we prize, what's important to us as a culture. You know, those guys were, as Robert says, their motive was purely to make money, and Aaron's wasn't.
While he had this singularity of purpose in mind about changing the world, I mean, he oftentimes it seemed struggled, you know, with himself as well. Did you get that sort of impression, a deeper understanding of that side of Aaron Swartz as you were making this film?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we go through some of his early blog posts where he talks about going in the bathroom and crying and things like that at his first job at Condé Nast, and this kind of disconnect that he felt at times. We also talked to his girlfriend, Taryn, girlfriend at the time of his passing, who says that, you know, she believed that at some point in his early 20s that he probably did have something like a clinical definition of the word, you know, of depression. But she doesn't believe that that was the case when he was living with her. So, you know, we definitely explore that kind of territory and try to understand. He seemed to carry, you know, the weight of the world on his shoulders.
Mm. And finally, I'm just curious, as people watch the documentary, I'm wondering, what do you hope they take away from the film?
I think that, you know, what I would love people to take away from this film is really just the ability to participate, to be a part of change and to fight for the things that you care about. I mean, I really think that Aaron, one of the striking things about him that came up in interview after interview is that Aaron actually he didn't think he was special. He didn't think he was extraordinary. I mean, I disagree. I think he's a remarkable kind of individual. But but he just believed that whatever talents you have, you can apply those talents and you can use those talents and those skills in ways that can genuinely make the world a better place. And you should question constantly, you know, well, what makes the world a bad place to start with, and how can my skills help that? And the notion that you can put your skills in the service of the public interest is something that he seemed to believe very, very passionately. So I hope that's what people walk away from this, feeling without that sense of kind of cynicism about the world, but that it's changeable, and you with your skills can be a part of that.
Brian Knappenberger is the director of The Internet's Own Boy, The Story of Aaron Swartz, which is screening on Monday at the Somerville Theater as part of the Independent Film Festival Boston, and also on Friday at MIT. There's going to be more information about both those screenings at our website, radioboston.org. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
There's more in a moment. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.